Hello, welcome to this edition of the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined by Matt Oper. How's it going, Matt?
It is going very well. Bearcats are on a roll. Won 6 in a row since the game we will not talk about.
Bearcats go Thanksgiving tournament, Emerald Coast Classic, beat George Mason. Kind of an interesting game. And then really put the screws to Ole Miss in the second half to pull away from them, pull away the Emerald Classic. Then followed by a win against Arkansas Pine Bluff, which was not interesting at all, really. What was your big overall takeaway from this week of Bearcat basketball, besides that they're the champions of the Emerald Coast?
The title they always wanted. It's still a work in progress. They're figuring things out. You know, like I was impressed with the way they really bottled up Ole Miss, but that's not really that much of a surprise because this team is so long defensively that they just kind of get after it. And I've been a little bit more happy with how Mick has gone about his rotation and kind of just kind of experimenting, trying different things. That's what you have to do, you know, for this group, because whatever the group he thought was going to be his best five at the start of the year, I don't think it's going to be that group. Like, it's not going to be that Brooks. I mean, it's definitely not going to be Brooks, Trey Scott, Cumberland, Jennifer, and Broom. Like, that group just does not work. So that was obvious after game one, and he's, you know, trying a lot of different lineup combinations to find a group that works. And I mean, the biggest move was moving Keith Williams into a starting role, and he's been a revelation in the last 6 games. And I've been really happy with the way he's played. He's still not shooting the ball great, but his willingness to shoot is a breath of fresh air with this group.
And he's like one of those guys where like his intensity on defense kind of carries over. Like, it, as you mentioned, his shooting, it's kind of spotty. Like, he like went off a bit against Arkansas Pine Bluff. But, like, he gives you the dimension that, like, nothing against Broom, but, like, he just wasn't giving you as a starter. And, like, Broom coming off the bench has just been, I don't know if he's been more comfortable, but he's, like, really accepted that role. And he's really taken to being, like, more of an offensive player off the bench. And I kind of find the rotations, like, a lot better since, like, he's trimmed it down. Although it is surprising, like, Trevor Moore is goodbye until next year, I guess. He's completely out of the rotation. He didn't even play at all against Ole Miss. But really, you only need to go, like, 7, maybe 8 deep. And that's kind of the rotation he cut to, with Fredericks and Logan Johnson getting some run. So, I've liked that team. Like, they play really hard defensively, just not a prize. But, like, against Ole Miss, like, that game was kind of close. And then they just, like, put the screws to them, and Ole Miss just had a ton of trouble scoring.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really long group when they play Logan Johnson out there with Keith Williams. Because Keith is a little bit bigger than you think he is. Because, you know, he is a guard, but he's a lot longer than you think. I mean, he's 6'5", 210. And he's a skinny 210. Like, he's going to get even bigger. But his ability to cover space is something that you need with this kind of defense. And, you know, they need willing offensive players, flat out. And he is, and he's kind of thrived in this role. And that's something that gives me a little bit more positivity going forward for the rest of the year. But going for, like, the biggest issue right now, to my mind, is this is Jerron Cumberland's most usage, like his highest usage rate. It's also his least effective. He's been less effective than he has been in previous years with a heavier load, and that's got to change. He's got to up his offensive rating a little bit, and I think a lot of that is he's not getting to the free throw line as much as he has in years past, and his shooting has not been great. On two-pointers, he is shooting just 40%. And in previous years, like, he was just a beast down low. When he got to the rim, he always made it. And it just seems like that's kind of gotten away from his game a little bit. He needs to be a little bit more efficient if he's going to consume that number of possessions.
Yeah, because, like, on his free throws, like, he got to the line a ton against Ole Miss. And, like, that's been about half his free throw attempts for the season. Like, it's been something he really hasn't, like, done a ton. Like, so it's good to see at least him go back to taking over. Like, he had a really good game against Ole Miss, like 25 points. But even though, like, as you mentioned, his shooting, it's kind of been a bit spotty. It's like, it's part of the problem of having such a heavy load offensively. Like, he goes 5-17 from the field. Like, which on a normal night, like, may catch you. But against, like, a team like Ole Miss, who's, like, nothing great, and probably not a tournament team. Like, that's enough. And, like, they played defense well enough in that game where they were really able to overcome their own offensive shortcomings. But one of the things I've been really, like, impressed with is Trey Scott has really kind of settled in. It's like a little secondary scorer. Like, he's had a nice little run of points. Like, he had a really good game against George Mason. Like, nobody could guard him. 14-8. 9 points, 9 rebounds against Ole Miss, 11 points, 7 rebounds against Pine Bluff. But just continuing, like, his, like, little solid stretch he's been on in this non-conference. I'm really interested to see if he can keep it up once they start playing teams with, like, actual, like, bigs.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be the key, because he's not a traditional post player, and he can't really attack from the post. He has to do it off the dribble. And, you know, he hasn't been a guy who has been asked, or even, like, you know, he's not been a guy who's been tasked with putting the ball on the deck 2-3 times in a possession and making something happen. But that's happening a little bit more often this year. He's been really good attacking closeouts when he gets kind of, like, swings under the wing. And that's an area where I think he can find sustained success in this offense, because, you know, that pass is always going to be there. That little action is always there. And if he can attack it aggressively every time, that's just going to get good offense. And Lord knows this team needs good offense.
Yeah, because that's still, like, the biggest concern. Like, even after coming off a game, they scored 104 points. Like, the offense has been fine. And, like, it's, like, got potential to be better. Like, right now they're in, like, 73 on KenPom, which, like, you kind of would like to see a little higher given the competition they've been playing lately. But, like, you'll take it, like, for such a young team with still trying to find their rotation and find their legs. Like, the one thing, though, that's been, like, not, like, surprising, but, like, concerning is still the three-point shooting. Like, they hit 11 and 19, which kind of, like, skewed things in a different direction. But they only had 7 attempts against George Mason, who, like, really ran them off the line. And that's something that they really struggled with against the game we're not going to mention. And it's going to be a concern for some of these tougher contests coming up, like this weekend at UNLV.
Yeah, they just need to find a way to get more efficient looks at three-pointers, because the way they're shooting, it's not just that they're shooting at a low percentage. They're not even taking the shots. That's the bigger concern. And last year's group, that was not a problem. If they were open, they were shooting. And that included Gary Clark and Kyle Washington. You know, I mean, Kyle, you cringed a little bit every time it went up, but it was going up. You know, this group, watching them play, especially, you know, it reminds me a lot of some of the worst offensive teams in the Mickey, and just in terms of willingness to shoot. Like, you got a lot of guys who got the Kevin Johnson pump fake going, and that's not good. Like, if you're open, you don't need to pump fake if you're open. Like, pump fakes are for when guys are guarding you, not for when you're standing at the three-point line with plenty of time to take a shot. And willingness to take a shot is still an issue for this offense. And, you know, it was masked to some extent over the last few games, but coming up in this stretch, if you're not willing to take the open shot, it's gonna be a problem. just because you're playing much better teams.
Yeah, definitely. And, like, not to harp on Cumberland, but he had a really miserable time in the Emerald Coast Classic when those two teams really, really focused on him. Like, he was able to, like, as I mentioned, have a big offensive game in one game. But, like, if his shooting is that down, like, they could be in some trouble. Just because I don't really know where all these other points are going to come from when you don't have such an advantage inside. Like, against George Mason, they were just able to get the ball inside. And against Ole Miss, they were able to get to the free throw line. And against, like, Pine Bluff, they were able to do anything they wanted. Like, they were 30 or 45 on twos in that game. It's, like, insane. But, like, the offense really is going to be, like, the big issue this season. And especially Cumberland's role. And, like, if he can handle it, like, they can be a contender. But if not, I don't know. It's, like, really hard to say, like, where they could end up.
I mean, that's the thing with this team. Like, all possibilities are valid at this point. Like, you can tell me that they go, you know, after the start, they go 0-3 in these next three big games. And from that point, it just kind of disintegrates and falls apart. And they end up the year, you know, 20-18 or 15-15 or whatever. Like, I can definitely envision that. I can definitely envision that team, this team having that kind of performance for the season. You could tell me that everything gels and the defense becomes outstanding and they kind of slow down and rock fight their way to 25 games in another tournament burst. That I can see that. But anything is possible with this group, for good or for bad.
Except for the guys, as weak as the schedule has been, like the encouraging thing has been like they've been finding out the rotation, getting some guys involved. But that, like, it's going to come like nut cutting time, like in the next like 3 weeks. And I really am interested to see like how Mick handles it. If he even cuts the rotation, maybe even a bit more, and just like focuses on getting more of the guards in. And because Sosa may have been playing like the like emergency like one stint a half. If he fell out of the rotation, you just play like Fredericks and Broom off the bench, like your athletic guys. Like, Fredericks is that's progressed like kind of well. He's like ingrained himself in the offense. I think you have an interesting group that way.
Yeah, I would be shocked. Like, this team is going to be a lot like SMU a couple years ago with Sosemi. Or not Sosemi, Semi Ojale, where you got one guy that you focus on, and you got a bunch of guys who kind of complement him, but you only play six people. Like, that's where they're at. Like, Mamadou Diarra is not going to play much. Sosemi is probably not going to play much in the conference. Trevor Moore is not a part, like, he's clearly not a part of, he's not a factor. Like, I wouldn't be shocked to see him transfer out of the program after this year. But they, like, it's just going to get cut to the bone, because that's the only way that this team is going to win. And, you know, because for as much as I want Mick to experiment, his approach after the Ohio State game was not to play more dudes. It was to play less dudes in more restricted roles. And it's been successful on the scoreboard, and that's really all that he cares about. But, you know, not to say it again, but we know how this ends, because we do. We've seen it before, frequently.
Yeah, like, that's really the underlying factor, is, like, where does this season progress? And I don't, they played 7 games, which is like almost what, like a tenth of their schedule, and it's still really hard to get a read on them. Just in the sense that, like, I really don't, like, Logan Johnson's a freshman, so we really don't know how he's gonna perform the entire season. Like, most of the time, at least from UC's freshmen, like, most of them have had a little rough patch. Like, so hopefully he doesn't hit that, because he's, like, such a pivotal part of their team. Like, you'd like to see him get a little bit more like action. But it seems like they're kind of like locked into the rotation now.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, Mick did the annual March curling of the, you know, like culling of the rotation. He did it in November. So, like, these six, seven dudes who are playing minutes now, you're going to play these minutes all year long. Unless something bad happens, you know, the other seven guys on the roster, you guys can just kind of chill out. You're not really going to have to worry about performing at any point.
The Ole Miss game, we'll just take the box score from that one. 30 minutes, 33 for Cumberland, 33 for Trey Scott. Like, obviously, those two guys have been probably your most consistent players and two of, like, your better players on both ends. So they're going to play a ton, given foul trouble, I guess, for Trey Scott. Williams played 24 minutes, so he's in the flex spot. Jennifer played 27. Like, he's obviously going to play a ton because they only have, like, two ball handlers besides Cumberland. And, like, Brooks played 20 minutes. So he's the guy you take out for Fredericks and the occasional, like, Sosa minutes. Like, it's like a really guard-heavy lineup at times, which makes it kind of surprising he doesn't try to lean into that a bit more.
Yeah, I mean, like, they need more. Like, if these are the eight dudes you're going to play, theoretically, I don't have a problem with that. But you gotta have multiple styles that you can play with these eight dudes. And you do. Like, you got a couple of really big, burly guards who can rebound very well, and Cumberland and Fredericks. So, like, if you decide to play small, I know, foreign concept, probably won't happen. But if you do decide to do that, you're not going to lose out on rebounding because you got those two guys there, plus whoever your big's going to be, whether that's Scott or Brooks or, you know, Sosembe, whoever it is. You're not going to lose on rebounding if you decide to go small. And if you do decide to go small with this group, like, that's how your most efficient offense is probably going to come about, is by playing only the one big. But we all know Mick's aversion to that. His solution to that is to take a big in Trey Scott and make him a wing. And that'll work against, you know, the shitty teams on the schedule. But when you go into the gauntlet of this next run with, you know, Xavier and UCLA and Mississippi State, is that going to work? Is having your spacing that compromised by putting a non-shooter at the wing? Like, is that going to be effective? My intuition says no, but we're going to see what happens.
Especially with, like, we've, like, mentioned it before, like, in the, like, preview episodes. Like, well, how reliant they are on guys driving. Like, Williams gets a lot of his points going to the 10, so does Cumberland. Like, if you clog up the lane, or even, like, put, like, a non-shooter out on the wing, they, like, go four out. Like, that really just clogs that things up. And this team has enough trouble being consistent on offense without that. But it seems like they've definitely bought in on the defensive end. So, like, some of these games, it just kind of screams like they're going to be a rock fight team. Which...
Oh, they are 100% a rock fight team. They will go to the quarry, pick up the biggest fucking boulder, and throw it at your head. And that's their strategy.
The Mick Cronin trademark. His new offense is, hey, let's try this rock fight offense. But it's not the same one we've run the last few years. It's a different offense.
Hey, see this power forward? Yeah, we're going to put him on the wing, and you're going to guard him like a wing, right? No. No, I'm going to treat him like a non-shooting power forward. That's what I'm going to do. That's what good teams are going to do to this group. Like that's the big wrinkle this year, is to put Trey at the wing. And the good teams on the schedule, the well-coached teams, you know what they're going to do? They're going to be like, all right, here you go, Trey. Have the ball. Have all the space. Do what you want with it, but you're not getting to the rim. What does he do in that situation? I don't know. I really don't. Because that's not something he's been tasked with doing before. And it's a completely new role for him. Like, he's playing the Gary Clark role in this offense, but he's not Gary. Like, he doesn't have his feel for the game. He's not as good a passer as Gary was. So, I mean, could it work? Sure. We'll see. I don't know. I don't feel great about it just because I feel like I have a good grasp of who Trey Scott is as a player, and he's an effective player. You know, he's a great energy guy. He's a great rim runner. He's a great defender. Is he somebody who can create offense off the bounce for you? No. I mean, like, that's where I'm at. Like, until I see it, that's where I'm at. Like, I have to see it, and until I do, I'm not sold on this team.
And definitely, he's like the big X factor. It's like, if he turns out, like, his performance now is what he's going to give you all season long, then this team definitely has a chance. But if he's going to, like kind of revert to somebody who doesn't want to take a huge part in the offense, or is just inefficient, then, like, you're really going to, you're going to have trouble winning the conference. Like, it's like his passing, as you mentioned, it's, like, nowhere near Gary Clark's level. And, like, obviously it's tough for a big to be at, like, that level. But the last three games, like, 2 assists, 6 turnovers, after getting off to a pretty solid start. Well, 8 assists, 4 turnovers to start. It's like, he's, like, kind of washed out in that sense. But, like, his, like, rebounding is okay. Like, his offensive rebounding has gone down since he's played more minutes, but that's just what happens when you start instead of what happens when you come off the bench and have one thing to do. Like, that's a team that they rebound really well, and I think that's just like a Mick Cronin trademark. So has there been any one player you wanted to talk about that we haven't mentioned yet?
Yeah, like, Justin Jennifer gets shit on a lot for, like, he's the avatar of a lot of people's frustrations with this team, but, like, he's not the problem. Like, he has his limitations as a player. There's no doubt about that. He's only going to have big offensive games against bad teams. But, like, he initiates the offense. He doesn't make mistakes. He is very secure with the ball. Like, he just kind of keeps things rolling. And that more than anything is what this team needs. And I think that is the reason why Caden Broome went to the bench, is ball security is not really a synonymous trait with Caden Broome. He's a little bit more likely to attack, and he's a little bit more likely to make mistakes in terms of turning over the ball. And by having Justin Jennifer run the show until, you know, it's 10 seconds left on the shot clock and Jaren gets the ball, it just kind of keeps the offense moving a little bit smoother. He's a decent catch and shoot guy from three. I think his a little surprising this year. Like, he's not great. Like, he's not an all-conference player so far this season, and I'm curious to see what he does. It's a little bit tougher.
Yeah, same here. Because, like, I've always been kind of, like, encouraged by how he's played. He's not, like, not afraid to take those drives when he's got a gap. Like, he'll keep you honest, at least. And I think, like, the thing that, like, you mentioned, like, he just keeps the ball moving, keeps the offense moving. He doesn't, like, pound nails for, like, 25 seconds. And, like, he's, like, good at getting guys shots. Like, he's got 2 turnovers this entire season, which is, like, kind of impressive. One of the lowest turnover rates in the nation. And his assist rate's at a career high percent.
I get people's frustration with him about not being an attack-minded player, but that's not what Mick wants in a point guard. That's never been what he wants in a point guard. Is somebody who attacks. He wants somebody to start the offense and, you know, be a threat as a spot-up shooter. That is Mick's ideal point guard, right? Yeah, and that's Jennifer to a T.
If somebody like who doesn't get lost on defense, and somebody can knock down shots when he's open. And like we just saw a lot against Pine Bluff, like, you leave him open enough times, so can him. And his Three-pointers have been better this year, 7-16. 44% pretty much. You'll take that from your point guard. Like, obviously, it's probably going to dip a little bit once they play better competition. Because his numbers have done that every year, but especially last year when they played the toughest teams. Like, he just didn't get those open looks that he gets when you play, like, that Arkansas Pine Bluffs of the world.
Yeah, if anything, he needs to be a little bit more aggressive finding his spots to create offense for himself. But I've had zero complaints with the play of Justin Jennifer this year. And like, anytime I watch a game or, you know, kind of monitor it on Twitter, like, everybody is just tearing the guy to pieces. And I'm just like, I don't see why. Like, you know, somebody made the point that the only reason he has such a high assist to turnover ratio is that if anything goes wrong, he backs out the offense. It's like, that's not really his fault. He's doing what he is told to do by his coach. That's a Mick thing. Because that's not just a Justin Jennifer thing. Like, Mick would do the same shit with, you know, Jacob Evans last year. If anything went wrong in a set, they backed it out and gave it to Jake. Like, and I get that backing it out and giving the ball to Justin Jennifer to, you know, to get it to Cumberland is a little bit different. But, like, that's not... That is, like... They run offense with a profoundly paralyzing fear of making a mistake. That's not the players. That's the atmosphere. That's the coach that they're playing for. That's just how it is.
Max, you can't, like, point the finger at him and then, like, say, oh, why do they just run, like, the same, like, stale offense or whatever? Yeah, it's because, like, he's, like, looking to make to get the plays. Like, he's not calling the plays himself. Like, this isn't, I don't know, the NBA or something. Like, I think for the job he has to do, I think he does it. He does it fine. And, like, I think he's, like, kind of better than, like, some of the other just, like, temporary placeholder point guards they've had in the past that just, like, machinely run your offense until whoever, like, your major contributor is that does all the scoring.
Yeah, I mean, he's been fine. This team has been fine. But, you know, like, I'm still where I was at a couple of weeks ago after the Ohio State game. Like, we'll see. All of this is fine. I will watch it. I have to see it when it matters in March. That's where I'm at. Like, anything that happens now is great. It's fun. It's entertainment. It'll get me through the winter. But, like, I'm not really going to buy in on this group until I see them make a run when it matters.
It's hard not to feel that way, like, especially after last year, like, the best team he may ever have that could make it out of the second, or make it out of the first weekend. Let's say he could make it out of the second round. Like, how are you feeling about the upcoming stretch? At least UNLV and Northern Kentucky. Like, UNLV hasn't been great shakes, but that game is in Vegas, just always seems like a difficult place for teams to play. And then they play Northern Kentucky on Tuesday. Don't know if we'll record before that game, but, like, what are your just, like, overall thoughts on those two teams? Like, pretty solid teams that have, like, decent coaches to above average. I think John Brandon is a really good coach. Like, where do you feel? Like, do you think these games are going to give us an indication of where this season's going? Or do you think it's just going to be more, like, business as usual, taking care of teams like they did last weekend?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to be aesthetically pleasing games to watch. Like, I think we'll take care of business and get a couple wins, but it's not going to be a fun time for anybody. But, I'm really interested in watching Northern Kentucky because... Like I said, Brennan's a really good coach, and what he's done has gone really under the radar, except to, like really – people who have a college basketball problem know what Northern Kentucky has done and what they were a couple years ago, but he's flown way under the radar. And the kids on that team are going to be – they're going to be really up for a game with UC just because a lot of those kids are local and from the area. Like, they kind of recruit in this area almost exclusively. So that'll be something. That'll be a fun game to watch for sure. And I think that one's going to be a little bit closer than we anticipate. The UNLV one is a little bit more different because I don't really have a feel for them. I've only seen a couple snippets of games with them, and I haven't really been super impressed with really any of their performances so far. Like, they've taken a couple tough losses to Marymount and Valparaiso, and then they've just kind of taken care of business against the worst teams on their schedule. But they have what UNLV does in the next couple games is going to kind of set the tone for their season, because it's not just UC that they're playing, then they have Illinois, then they have BYU, and that'll really kind of decide their season, whether or not they're going to be able to compete for a potential NCAA tournament bid, or whether they're just going to kind of scrape by and maybe, if they're lucky, get like a CBI bid.
I kind of see the UNLV game going down like the George Mason game did, or the Ole Miss game did, where if you see it can pop out to a quick start, like they did against Ole Miss, like you can kind of ride that wave for a while. But at some point, like, UNLV is going to have trouble scoring, and the Bearcats should be able to clamp down on them. Like, UNLV can't really shoot the three. One of the worst teams in the nation at that. They have a turnover problem. They rank 340 in turnover rate on KenPom. And there are, 347 teams or something like that. Just kind of insane. So, like, that should be something you should be able to take care of. Although, they have the home court advantage, which is always a weird atmosphere when you play UNLV. It seems like it's either lively or it's dead. And, like, they've offensive rebounded really well. It's like, that would be, like, the only things I would look at. Yeah, NKU is an interesting one. As you mentioned, like, they've taken care of business against pretty much everybody they've played. Got a tough loss at UCF. And they're going to be really up for that game. And that's just like one of those games where it seems like it's going to be a hair-pulling game. But the Bearcats should be able to, like, put a stamp on that one, too. At least you would think. At home, you shouldn't lose to a team like NKU at home.
Yeah, like, the UNLV game is not going to be a fun one to watch. That is for sure. Because these are second-shot offenses. Especially for UNLV. Like, if they don't turn the ball over and get a shot up, they're going to go attack the glass with everybody and maybe hope to get a layup out of that. And that seems to be their entire offensive strategy.
Which is certainly a strategy.
It's a very familiar strategy.
Again, their best player looks...
Like, where have I seen this before?
I don't know. Like, what teams can't shoot an offensive rebound really well? I don't think I've ever seen one of those.
Yeah, you remember the 44-40 game against Pitt in the Garden? You remember that one? This is going to be like that. It was a while ago, but that game... That game is in my mind forever just because of what I saw.
You can't unsee that game. That game just, like, lives in a part of your brain forever. It's like, oh, the horror of such a terrible game that people have tried to, like, retroactively make good. Or, like, even better, like, I just remember, like, being on Twitter for that game. People are like, oh, what a shit game this is. Like, 44 to, like, whatever the score was before that end. Like, people are, some, like, UC fans and Pitt fans are like, oh, no. They just play hard defense. It's like, no, 44. Like, if your, like, high is 44, like, that game is terrible.
Yeah, if the most efficient offense is 0.92 points per possession, not great. Super not great.
Yeah, 44-43. Unbelievable. Do you think we're going to see a game like that this season?
No question. I'm circling UCF on my imaginary schedule.
Oh, man. Speaking of UCF, do you have anything that you've seen from the league that stood out to you? Like Houston undefeated, getting top 25 votes, but they haven't really played anybody important yet. They play Oregon this weekend, which should be a pretty interesting test for both teams. So I'm not really sold on Oregon.
Yes. Like, that game is going to... That's the most interesting game of the non-conference schedule for the entire conference, as far as I'm concerned. Just because Oregon is... I mean, they have the most... Like, outside of the Duke trio, the most can't-miss player to me is Bol Bol, just because I've never seen anything like this. Never. You know, 7'4 dudes who play like guards, not really normal. Not normal at all.
Especially, like, with his shooting range, it's, like, crazy to watch somebody that big be so good.
Yeah, and NBA scouts are like, you know what he needs to do? He needs to shoot more threes. Because two a game isn't enough. He needs to shoot, like, five. Basketball's weird now.
It really is. It's turned into, like, a weird... I don't know. We could get to, like, the bigger issue of how, like, weird the college game has gotten. Where it's, like, half these guys are playing for the pros. Like, half of them are playing for, like, this season. And, like, you meet somewhere in the middle. Like, once January starts. It's a weird process.
Well, it's going to get really interesting in 2021 where these guys can make serious money. Even if they're not drafted, they can make serious money in the G League. Like, that's going to really change how this sport goes. And, like, you can see it now. Because, like, and of course, the harbinger of this is Calipari at Kentucky. Like, he really wasn't a factor with Williamson or Reddish or any of those guys. It's almost like he knows what's coming because he knows that that model, the one-and-done model, isn't going to be effective going forward. So he's already kind of pivoting to a different kind of player that he's going after. And, you know, 5 years from now, Coach K will do the same thing and pretend like it's a new thing. And everybody's going to be like, oh, yeah, Coach K did this. Yeah. I don't like Coach K.
Them losing to Gonzaga was immensely satisfying.
Oh, it was great.
It was
fantastic.
There's really never a time that, like, Duke losing isn't fun.
No, I celebrate happy National Duke Losing Day every year in March just because it's so much fun. Unfortunately, this year, I'm not going to be able to celebrate it. And you know what? I'm fine with it.
That's what made the
game. Because I can't watch enough of Zion. I'm sorry. There's just nothing like him. Speaking of other unicorns, Bol Bol's one. Zion Williamson is something else. Because 6'9", 300-pound dude shouldn't be able to do what he does.
Yeah, he's insane. I know people like want to like resist like the ESPN narratives and all that stuff. Then it's like, of course, like we all want to. Like once they play, it's like impossible not to watch. Like their games, I'm just like kind of like marvel at like what their team does. Like he has like a man against like children against Indiana. Like he's just like unstoppable.
Yeah, and like I don't even give a fuck about Reddish or Barrett. Like I really don't. I am there for Zion. That's it. Because anytime, like there are not many players in college basketball. Especially in college basketball. Like, in the NBA, you see this a little bit more. But in college basketball, there are very rarely are there players where if you watch them, you will see something you've never seen before. Like, the last player like that in college was probably Kevin Durant, where every game was much watched because you might see something new and unique. Zion gives you something. He gives you, like, five new things every game. Like, oh, never seen a 6'9", 300-pound dude do a spin move and dunk before. That was fun. What's next?
Yeah, like that year of like Texas basketball. Yeah, like you said, must watch. Like I think they flamed out pretty early in the tournament, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
But they had that one game against
Oklahoma State.
I was thinking of the game against Texas A&M, like where they went to like double overtime. It's like him against AC Law. Because one of the that was a great game. So it's the Oklahoma State game, which was an insane game. Because it's were really fun. Bring back Kevin Durant.
He's doing all right. Yeah, but like this level of excitement for college basketball is a little bit different. And like this season has been awesome so far. And it's not because the play has been great. Like, it's college basketball. The play is never that great. But watching that trio is something else. And I fucking hate Duke. Like, I really do. Like, I want to hate this team so much, but I can't not watch them. And I can't not enjoy myself watching Zion, like, destroy some dude's soul randomly for no reason.
Yeah, like, and, like, they're, I don't know, like, they're fun to watch. Like, on top of, like, having three, like, really great players. And Trey Jones, who I like a ton. I liked his brother, too, at Duke, Tyus Jones. Like, he's, like, the same type of player. Like, they just move so smooth. Like, now we, like, ended up gushing about Duke. And now we have to, like, kill ourselves or something. End the podcast.
Yeah.
Quick, UCF, I watched them against Western Kentucky like last weekend and the week before. Like, they seem pretty interesting, but like they kind of are who they are. Wichita State is like not good. Who else is there? UConn. Like, they looked really good against Syracuse a couple weeks ago, but then they haven't played anybody since. But they have had blowouts, so it seems like they're back somewhat. SMU has not really played anybody. They're 4-3. Memphis, the loss to Charleston, which is pretty embarrassing. And Tulsa played Nevada pretty close. Then like lost to Southern Illinois. So I don't really know what to think about Tulsa.
No, and like it's an interesting, like the next games for all these teams are going to be really interesting. Saturday is going to be a very interesting AAC basketball slate. Because you got Houston, Oregon, you got UC and UNLV. Wichita State is going to play Baylor, and that's probably going to go badly. And Memphis has Texas Tech. Like, there's some really interesting games on the schedule next. Oh, and UConn has Arizona. Like, these next games from those teams are going to tell something. Because none of them have really shown out, and they haven't really played the best competition. And the Penny experiment in Memphis is one to watch. Like, this is obviously not going to be their year, but next year, man, they're loading up on talent.
That's like been like the weird dichotomy with Memphis is like they're not very good this year, and like people that got really huffy, especially after they lost to Oklahoma State and Charleston this past weekend. But like they have so much coming in, it's like. He doesn't have to be, like, the best coach in the world because they have so much talent on the way where they should be, like, amazing. You just have to get through this season first.
Yeah, this year is the building year for sure.
It doesn't even look like anybody on this roster is going to be, like, playing much next year.
No. The Lawson seemed to be doing well. It's gotta hurt.
Yeah, I'm sure that makes all the Memphis fans happy too. Like, they both go to Kansas, and of course they're really good. Like, Kansas is like a weird team, like undefeated, and like they get passed over by two teams to be number one.
Yeah, I mean they're flying under the radar as much as Kansas can.
Which is, like, unbelievable because they beat Michigan State, Marquette, and Tennessee. It's like they beat three really good teams, and, like, they're under the radar.
Well, I mean, that's how this year is going to be, though, because Duke just sucks up all the oxygen. Everybody else can just live in peace.
Yeah, that's just the basketball world with our JUCO for Lords. Especially with them being really good again. Do you have any other thoughts before we wrap this one up?
Go Bearcats.